beaming down. My God, my God, they're beaming me up with them. Don't put that probe there. Don't put that probe there. Don't put the... Listen to the Judge of Mabus radio show at 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights with host Jeffrey Pritchard, bringing you The High Strange. Visit www.churchofmabusradio.com. That's www.churchofmabusradio.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. I'm psychic medium Christopher George, and I have a new show that will air the first Friday of every month from 11 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. The show is called Insight with psychic medium Christopher George. It's all about psychic readings. I welcome my listeners to call in for a free reading. Just remember, don't ask me a question that you really don't want the answer to. I'll give it to you the way the spirits give it to me. Straightforward and real. The first Friday of every month. Insight, 11 to midnight.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm psychic medium Chris George.
And I'm Stephanie Minetti. Psychic medium, are you sure about that, Chris? It's more like psychic extra large.
Yeah, real funny, Minetti. Defending again being my girlfriend. Together, we have Second Sight NYC, a parapsychic radio show based out of New York City.
Join us each week as we journey into the unknown. Let's cross the threshold of reality together.
We take a fun and no-nonsense approach to our show, and we love to interact with our audience. Each week, you can expect a great guest, interesting topics, and strong opinions by myself and Stephanie.
As well as rapid readings, psychic dream interpretations, and the gemstone of the week. And don't ask us a question that you don't want an answer to.
Give us 2 hours of your time to inform, enlighten, and entertain you. Let the journey begin.
Join us.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello everyone, Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Come join us each Friday evening at A Global Focus's new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Hello, I'm Chip.
And I'm Nicole.
We host the Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
We broadcast live every Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern for 2 full hours. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, as well as our website, mindcemetery.com.
We cover all the topics you won't hear on your local news.
Well, I don't really like watching the news anyway.
Then this is the perfect show for someone like you.
I wouldn't go that far. After all, I am the skeptic.
So you don't believe in ghosts?
Nope.
UFOs?
Yeah, no.
How about Bigfoot?
Not really. You'll never find a Bigfoot.
How about the lost city of Atlantis, then?
Isn't that on Google Earth? No? Then forget it. It's never going to get found.
Looks like I have my work cut out for me, then, as I take on a true skeptic as we discuss the latest and hottest topics in the UFO and paranormal fields with some of the most provocative and informative guests to hit the airwaves.
That's right, you do. And it all happens right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, live every Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, as well as mindcemetery.com.
Welcome to A Global Focus, with guest Dennis Roger Dinokla, author and field researcher. Dennis Roger Dinokla's work is summarized in both his book, film, entitled Presence, UFOs, Crop Circles, and Exo-Civilizations. Dennis's extensive research includes the topics of crop circles, ET species, the modalities and mechanics of UFO travel, and dark matter. Again, thanks for joining us for tonight's interview. Please, for our friends in the network room here on Pal Talk, let me know if I'm speaking too loudly. Patrice Sheridan, good evening, everyone, to this edition of A Global Focus. This week's program features author and field researcher Dennis Roger Dinokla. Dennis has investigated the UFO and ET fields and produced research results, which are new and innovative. Dennis Roger Dinokla's work is summarized in his book entitled Presence, UFOs, Crop Circles, and Exo-Civilizations. Also, Dennis's film, Presence, UFOs, Crop Circles, and Exo-Civilizations, was presented at the 2012 International UFO Congress in Scottsdale, Arizona, and well-received. Dennis's extensive research includes the topics of crop circles, ET species, the modalities and mechanics of UFO travel, and dark matter. Welcome to the program, Dennis. It's an honor, and we're very happy to have you as our guest this evening.
Oh, thank you very much, Patrice and Joe. I'm very happy to talk on UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It's my first talk with you, and I'm very glad of this.
Thank you, Dennis. And also, I try to every week, thanks to Joe Montaldo, the network owner here at 107.9 FM, and also our global internet radio for network, for making these programs possible. Now, Dennis, the audience and I would like to hear from you on what you consider to be key aspects of your research. Also, I prepared some questions. Dennis, feel free during the discussion to make any comments or to direct the conversation topics to any particular subject. Dennis, from your research, do you think that the Earth has been and is visited by travelers from extraterrestrial civilizations?
I will ask you to repeat because the sound is not very good for me right now.
Certainly. And may I ask a question? Should I increase my system audio as well? I was concerned on that. I'll put right up my audio as well. Hardware and sound. Audio. Wait one second here. System volume. Please excuse me.
No problem.
Now you can probably hear me much better. And again, to our listening audience, this is A Global Focus. Guest, Dennis Roger Dinokla, author and field researcher. Dennis's book and film are entitled Presence, UFOs, Crop Circles, and Exo-Civilizations. Again, our guest this evening is Dennis Roger Dinokla, speaking from Paris. Now, Dennis, from your research, do you think that the Earth has been and is visited by travelers from extraterrestrial civilizations?
Yes, I worked especially on something that is called a UMOFILE. And in this UMOFILE, I will explain more about this, but I get some information very interesting about many exo-civilization, and I gather information about 18 exo-civilization with many details on those exo-civilization. However, there is more than 18 exo-civilization around the world, but at least I gathered very detailed information about those 18 ones. I gathered information about the arrival dates, sometimes the departure dates, the frequency of their visits, the planet where they are coming from, the star where they're coming from. So sometimes the location, when we can calculate where is really the star, we have information about the stated population, about the size of those ETs, about the physical appearance, and some information sometimes about their location. And we also have, in some case, the goal of those ETs, what they are coming from. So that's many information, very detailed, and we can use them, for example, to compare with information that are already confirmed. For example, with those information, I was able to understand that the famous autopsy film about the supposed autopsy film of the Roswell ET, I understood that it was a fake film, because the information I had in the UMO file were different from the description we have in the in this film. So I concluded that this film was a fake. And that's very interesting to get information in advance in this file. So I used a lot of time those information, and I compare with other information, for example, for the information I get in New Mexico with my friend, the elder shaman of the Ashiwi tribe, the Ashiwi or Zuni tribe. This tribe has an history link with ET people, and for the information I have in this file, in this UMO file, I was able to have an hypothesis that the ET people, that the Zuni tribe or the Ashiwi people met a long time ago can be the people that I call Eoxian. Eoxian ETs, that they were coming 1,000 years ago, and they are identified in 1969 on Earth, at least. And for the information we have, they come really periodically, and they are supposed to come from a star called HR003A from 128 light year, and we can say that that should be the star's star, and they are very tall. And this information is important because the Ashiwi people used to say that the main god, because they call those ET god, they are tall, 2-3 meters high. And the information the UMO people give through the UMO file is that those ETs are very intelligent and have a very strict moral standards. And what we can see in the Zuni and Ashiwi culture is that the main social standards are supposed to be given by the ET they met in their history, and all the social rules of the Ashiwi or Zuni people are supposed to come from the those ETs that gave them a very more strict moral standards that they always still have in the so that many things that gathers and merge to the same point of view, and for me it's a good hypothesis for to explain who are the ET who came to give this culture to the Zuni people.
Very intriguing information, Dennis. And again, I'd like to recommend your book very heartily to our audience. Again, it is titled, you also have a film by the same name, Presence, UFOs, Crop Circles, and Exo-Civilizations. Now, Dennis, you mentioned, well, your book is very detailed. For example, your Umayyad research, and again, Umayyad refers to a particular species that you believe are visiting the Earth, and that is from a very large file of material on them that has been collected by different researchers, inhabitants of the planet Umo, with their species termed Umites or Umo men. Now, Dennis, you mentioned in your Umayyad research, your Umayyad research gives precise details as to how the Umayyad technology and craft could enable a visit to Earth. And, you know, you also mentioned the factor of situations for the positive folding of space to enable travel from distant worlds in the universe, how these different species could reach the Earth.
Yeah. Just a small point on the names.
Thank you.
The name Umites is a term translated from Spanish in French, because the Umo people say in one of their letters that they prefer to be called Umitas with Spanish language, and Umo men in English and Humain in French. And in fact, some people who worked on the Humain went in Spain and they hear the name Umitas. And they, when they came back in France, they say Umit, because it's a translation of Umitas in French. But it's not the name of those people want to be called. So when I called about the Umo people, I respect the indication I have in the letter. I mean, if I speak in French, I will call them Humain. If I speak in Spanish, I will call them Humitas. And if I call them in English language, I will call them Umo men. That's for the just to respect an aspect that they talk in their own letters. For the travel, they explain in those letters that they sent to many scientists all over the world, and especially in France and Spain. They give us information for those travel, and they explain that in fact, we need to use another point of view on the cosmology. They explain that, in fact, we have other dimensions, not only the fourth space-time dimension, Einstein-Minkowski space-time dimension, but also other three-dimensional frame that they can use for their travel, because all four-dimensional frame is like a pancake. He moves and he has some folders. And sometimes the folders are in the right position and make them able to pass through the other frame and have another topology that able to travel by a kind of shortcut, and they come back to our frame, to our three-dimensional frame. And when we have 14 light years between Earth and the Umo planet, when they pass through the three other dimensional frame, they just have the equivalent of 3 light years. Sometimes we think that they use another kind of effect. We suppose that, but it's an hypothesis, they don't talk about this in the letter. My hypothesis is that they use also the top of the folder where we imagine that there is another effect. It's something we can imagine like a tunnel effect, and it had speed to travel in this other frame, and when you have 3 light years in the normal shortcut, you should have only 6 or 9 months if you use the top of the wave of the folder in the other frame. So you can imagine that such travels between a planet which is in the regular space-time frame at 14 light year, you just need, in fact, when you change your frame and use the top of the wave, only 6 or 9 months for your travel. And that makes you more comfortable, of course, to visit your neighbors.
Very interesting information. Now, Dennis, I had noted where my advanced studies are not in science. Unlike yourself, you're extremely knowledgeable in science and in IT and in math. My studies were in another field or domain. If I could just repeat some of my notes to you, I found them very helpful to understand the magnitude of your book. The research is excellent and it's extensive. Now, earlier in the book, Dennis, you mentioned as one aspect of space travel that one way you can decrease the actual distances traveled, there is at one point the inversion or substitution of the dimensional reference. There is an aspect of the folding of space, or there can be. And you do mention the shortcuts. Now here, where is my reference on this? It was very intriguing to me. For interstellar travel, on your interstellar travel chapter, Dennis, you note these routes can entail taking a shortcut through the anti-cosmos.
Yes. In fact, the shortcut is not through the anti-cosmos.
Oh, okay.
It's through the three-dimensional frame, the other three-dimensional frame. Because our cosmos has at least, for the common dimension, 10 dimension. We are in 4 of those 10 dimension, mm-hmm. And you have also the other one you can use with a 3-dimensional frame, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it's just a problem of translation. It's not anti-cosmos. The anti-cosmos is something else.
Okay.
In fact, that was not very easy for me to understand this anyway. when I wrote the Umo letters, and we work hardly to understand those meaning, because we don't know about those such things. But in the end, the fact is, we don't go to the anti-cosmos. We just switch to the three-dimensional frame, but we are still in our cosmos. That's different. We don't change matter to antimatter. We just, when we switch to the other dimensional frame, we switch energy to mass, mm-hmm. and mass to energy. But mm-hmm. we do not convert matter to antimatter. We switch energy to mass and mass to energy. That's different.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. That's very helpful to me. And also, you've noted further very interesting research findings here. The Umites note that their cosmos is a space-time continuum. And also you note that it required 10 dimensions to define it mathematically, end quote. That must be the Umite mindset there. And they've also done some great discussion here on black matter, referenced in the discussion of Umite cosmology, referring to the concept of dark matter. So black matter and dark matter are two synonymous terms here?
Yes. In this case, yes, we really need to talk about the anti-cosmos. What we can understand with the cosmology from the Umo people is that all the cosmos, because there is an infinity of cosmos, are gathered by pair. All cosmos as is anti-cosmos. But all cosmos and the anti-cosmos are quite different. In all cosmos, the main matter is matter, and we have very few antimatter. And in the anti-cosmos, we rarely have antimatter and a very few matter. But as you know, the matter and the anti are not exactly the same. The matter and the antimatter are not just the opposite. They are not really the opposite. There is a tiny difference between matter and antimatter. And this small difference change a lot the topology of the anticosmos. In the anticosmos, the antimatter don't make planets, it don't make galaxies, it just antimatter just give huge masses or huge masses of antimatter in the cosmos. And what happened is that we can imagine a kind of layer between the cosmos and the anti-cosmos. And this layer, if we can imagine like that, is like a speaker. And the sun on some is like the sun passing through the air with a speaker, and the layer transmit to our cosmos the is gravitational effect. The huge anti-gravitational the huge antimatter masses in the anti-cosmos produce a very important gravitational effect on or cosmos. That means the very huge masses in the anticosmos are able to settle the galaxy in our cosmos, and settle many many effects on our cosmos that until now we don't understand, and we just imagine that is black matter. But in fact, when we talk about black matter, we talk about the gravitational effect that we can measure and calculate, but we don't see any matter. That's the reason we call this black matter. But the real reason is that this huge matter that produce 90-80% of the gravitational effect, in fact, this matter is in the other side, in the anticosmos, and the huge mass in the anticosmos also produce different effects on our cosmos, like the what we call also the dark energy. And those phenomena we are still looking and searching for years, in fact, can have explanation when you understand that you have an anticosmos and a layer that make able the force from the anticosmos cut through and organize and have impact on cosmos.
Well, that's a fascinating explanation. It's really a that's a beautiful response. Thank you, Dennis. Now, Dennis, your work gives extensive details of Umai technology, their spacesuits, their craft, their spaceship dynamics, and possible propulsion types. It's really an excellent work. And Dennis, your research of the Umite interaction has included your deciphering, your decoding the Umite language.
Yes, it's a very big part of my work. In fact, I began with this work because in those letters we have some strange words. The Umo letters are written in English for English people, in Spanish for Spanish people, in French for French people. But inside those documents, we have strange words written with all letters, too, with Latin letters, but that have nothing to see with any terrestrial language. And for 60 years, many linguists try to decipher this language, but nobody succeeded. What I did on my work on those words was to collect, in fact, 7,500 words in those 1,400 pages. I stored the words in a database, and I analyzed them. And that make me able to understand step by step. After several months of work, I was able to decipher those words. And those words have something very different in their structure, and nothing to see with any language I know on Earth. It's and the main logic of the Umo people on the talk about this in the letter, they give a few information about their language. They told that their language is functional. That's an element that they give. And when I decipher those words, I was really surprised to find that really this language is a functional language.
Well, you know, Dennis, that decoding the Umayyad language certainly was a major task. I note here, I found it very impressive that you have determined the Umayyad language's, quote, structure of primary, phonetic, hierarchically interlocked concepts, end quote. Two other really interesting concepts here, Dennis. You mentioned that in deciphering the Umayyad language, it entailed the translation of that language in a logical and mathematical manner. I hear you're mentioning its functionality.
Yeah.
That's outstanding. And also, Dennis, your decoding of the Umayyad language has been done with reference to a communication understandable to the Earth populations as a sort of interface between the Umo and Earthlings. Is this what you mean, that it's a meta-language, the exchange of data of details between the Umos and the Earth population?
Yes, in fact, what happened? The Umo people have their own language. When they write their language, they use ideogram. And when they began their experiment in the 60s, after 15 years of study on Earth, what did they do? They start to send letters to many people, and especially in France and Spain, but also in Great Britain, in Australia, in America, in Russia, in China. But at least in Europe, we gather a bunch of letters, and those words are written in phonetics. Because it's a way for them to give them the sound of their words. So they wrote in phonetics their own words, and as I deciphered this, I understood that each sound means something special. Each sound have a special concept. So when they say something like uewa, and you have four sounds, uewa, wa, you have four sounds. So with four sounds, you have four concepts. And those four concepts mean something different. You mean something, A means something, W means something, R means something. So, those concepts, a word, a single Umo word, in fact, is like a kind of a small sentence of this bunch of concepts.
Well, you know, Dennis, I note your book contains a great deal of information here on the deciphering of the Umayyad language, the Umo language. Also, am I correct here that the Umayyad language is, quote, built according to combinations of functional phonemes, end quote. That sounds as though that was just reference. A phoneme is a small unit of speech. And, you know, I was fascinated, Dennis. Your book contains an intriguing list of primary concepts, quote, primary concepts or basic phonemes, end quote. And, you know, it's very intriguing. You give fascinating diagrams in your book for the deciphering of such Umayyad words as interstellar spaceship, also the word for spacesuit, and their word for human being. Very interesting. And Dennis, too, am I correct that you are continuing your efforts to fully decode the Umayyad ideograms?
I still do the deciphering for some words. I still have to decipher because I deciphered 90% of the Umayyad words we have in those letters, but I still have 10% more to work on. But I have done several really amazing discovery.
Yes.
When I discovered when I deciphered some words, because I discovered, for example, when I deciphered the word amino acid, I did not understand why the word amino acid, which is ICSI in the Umo language, and ICSI mean in the Umo language identify a frequency, a specific, that what the concept means, and identify a specific frequency to talk about an amino acid did not mean something for me, and neither for the biologist I worked with. So we stayed for 6 months wondering why we had this deciphering. And in the end, we found some studies on in Europe at least, on the plants, that we have some effect of the sounds of the plant on the plants. And some scientists who discovered that in fact any amino acid has its own specific frequency.
Wow. Wow.
But of course I was not able to discover that because there was nothing written about in clear in the Umo letter. It was necessary for me to decipher the words, the word ICSI, to understand what mean really ICSI in the Umo language. And what it was amazing, more amazing too, is that the word ICSI was written some 25 years before that this researcher discover, or at least give the hypothesis, that the amino acid have a specific frequency. So when someone wrote the word ICSI in those Umo letters, it was 25 years before that a terrestrial guy made the hypothesis that the amino acids had their own frequency. So we can conclude what we can conclude.
That's remarkable. Truly remarkable. Dennis, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. Dennis, may I ask a question? Is this aspect of functional phonemes related to the Umayyad language having a concept of atomicity?
Yeah. the atomicity is the reference to a big mathematician, Bertrand Russell, who worked in the early 20th century on the language, on mathematics. His work was to find how you can describe any talk in a logical way, and he thought that we can convert any language with atomic, that was the word they used, the atomic some atomic words, and the atomic words, functional or concept. In fact, Bertrand Russell have quite the same idea that the Humo people use for their own language. And Bertrand Russell worked hardly on this logic to build a kind of functional language. But in fact, we have the solution. But it's not Bertrand Russell who finds the solution. It's our neighbors that give us some help for this. And in fact, this Humo language is an atomic language with functional concept, small, basic functional concept. And when you gather them with hierarchically, they are hierarchically interlocked concept with that is very important, hierarchically interlocked, because that make you able to build many words, and if you change the order of the sounds, of course that change the meaning of the words. Of course, it's not just to gather different sounds. The structure also gives a meaning and a functional meaning of the words, and that's very common with the works that Bertrand Russell began in the early 20th century.
Well, thank you for that answer, Dennis. And again, the hierarchically linked concepts, or hierarchically linked phonemes, a very important part here in deciphering the words, and you get really excellent diagrams there in your examples of Humo words that have been deciphered, and also the Humite material itself. It really is a very intriguing book. It was what I couldn't put down. Dennis, you've also done some fascinating research on crop circles. I believe you call them there agroglyphs. You have an excellent discussion in your book on the Chilbolton crop circle in Hampshire, England. I believe that's 2001, and the Crabwood Farm crop circle in 2002. Now, Dennis, you know connections between these crop circles. The first one is, you think that both the Chilbolton and the Crabwood Farm crop circle were made in a period of seconds, and that these crop circles extend over hectares. Also, I have other questions on the crop circles. It's remarkable. And Dennis, now I hope I correctly understood this, you consider that the Chilbolton crop circle or agroglyph, Chilbolton crop circle or agroglyph, was a direct response to the 1974 message sent by SETI, and you think that the 27-year delay in the response could reflect the actual light-year distance in worlds between the creators of the Chilbolton crop circle or agroglyph and Earth.
Yes, what I have done on the Crabwood Farm, crop and the Shepperton one, is that I was surprised that this answer of Shepperton, the answer of the Arecibo message, came in 2001. Why they give us an answer in 2001 and we have crop circle since the 90s. So the IT, the ETs could answer us since the 90s, but they wait until 2001 to answer. So that means it's a time for us to consider, and if we consider that we have to pay attention between the time the, we send the message and the time we receive the response, it's 2001 less 1974, so that 27 light year. And when you are looking in the direction where the Arecibo message was sent, what do you find at 27 light year? You find a star, and just one. There is no other star around. There is rarely one star, and we know that star have at least exoplanets around this star, and this star is Mu Hercules A. It's a G5 star in a complex star system. It's the main star of the Mu Hercules system.
Very intriguing information. Now, Dennis, if I've noted correctly, you describe the Chilbolton and Crabwood Farm agroglyphs. Both have signatures, in quotes here, signatures, in both crop circles that seem to correspond, as you just noted, to a planetary system such as that of Mu Hercules A system. Four planets noted in the crop circle information. So in both, there was information as to a planetary system with four planets. And let me see here also. Am I correct here that both the Chilbolton and Crabwood Farm crop circles or agroglyphs convey the information which includes noting a being with a large or macrocephalic head?
Yes, it was really surprising for me to see that for a few miles between the Crabwood Farm agroglyph and the Chilbolton crops. And in both of them, we have a small guy with a macrocephalic head. Both of them have we can have a measurement of both of them around 1 meter. And in both of them, we have a signature and of four planets. And the position of the four planets are in both crop in a very special position. And we can understand that in the Chilbolton code, the description of the star system where they are coming from might be a G5 with 10 orbital zones on in the seventh orbital zone, what can we see? We can see those famous four planets in a special position. This makes me able to conclude that not observed. If we have both such information in both crop circles, the ship and the crop firmware. And in fact, that's the way I can link either the Shibbleton crop and the wall crop circle made since the 90s, because if Shibbleton and Crabwood Farms crop circles are linked, the wall crop circle are linked, because all the other crop circles have the same kind of frame like the Crabwood Farm crop circle, which is a special frame we can see everywhere on the through crop circles. So I was very confident with this result, because I get also a small indication in the UMO letters. In fact, I had a guideline in the UMO letters, because a small information is written about the crop circle, and the UMO men say that they know the ET species that make the crop circle, and they agree with their communication experiment, because what is the crop circle are made for? They are just made for to help us to understand what happened up or head. It's just a communication information from the Mu Herculesian people, and also experimentation on communication from the UMO people. Both of those ETs try to help us to understand by ourselves that we are not alone in the cosmos.
Thank you, Dennis, for that information. Now, am I correct, Dennis, that the information transmitted by code in these crop circles is very significant to their meaning and purpose? And would that code be binary code in these two crop circles?
Yes. Both crop circles have codes. The Shibbleton one is the same kind of code of the Arecibo message, so we can decipher it easily. And the Crabwood Farm is a very funny code. There is a very funny code inside a quite conventional CD, a regular CD with ASCII codes, binary codes, where we can read the sentence very known that many people can read on the web. And the most important thing in this message for me is the sentence where we can read, "Beware the bearer of false gifts and their broken promise." And we can easily understand that the bearer of false gifts and their broken promises maybe are the one who promote to send message to ET through the cosmos, but when they are coming on Earth, they are not very welcome, at least. And it would be like you say, hello, come on. And when your friend is coming, you just ignore him. That is what happened. So why promote communication message through satellite like the Pioneer and Voyager, and when you have the visit of your neighbor, you are just saying, no, they don't exist. So beware the bearer of false gift and their broken promises.
Dennis, thank you very much for that explanation. I know that particular message, beware the givers of false gifts and their broken promises, is very much discussed on the Internet. You know, Dennis, let me know if my thought is correct here, if I'm correctly interpreting this. Dennis, you do find from your research that the nature of the ET visits to Earth is one of monitoring and non-interference, but you also note the exception of one race that may be conducting experiments which might entail abductions. Does that factor into that concept?
Yeah. For the first point of the monitoring and non-interference, what we can see, at least, and that's very known, we can have data about this, is that we have many UFO intervention on nuclear plants, on weapons. So we have a real nuclear monitoring from the ETs. It's all around the world. You can have examples since the 50s in America, and we also have other examples on our submarine nuclear base on in France, where you can see UFO passing through the base, and when you have submarines with nuclear weapon, they deactivate the nuclear weapon inside the submarine. So we can easily conclude that ET have a monitoring on Earth, and especially on nuclear plants and weapons. If you look at Chernobyl and Fukushima disasters, you can get some information that in the Chernobyl plant, a big part of the radioactive element have been converted in aluminium. Nobody can convert radioactive uranium or plutonium in aluminium, and neither in the inside Fukushima plant. A part of the radioactive element might be converted in aluminium to be more easy for us to stop the crash that we were preparing to have. So you have some interference in this way, but it's an interference just for monitoring. It's not interference to act something else. So I wonder why we have abduction. About the abduction, the Umo people give information about this. they talk about one species who have done, and they call them Goians, and they are described by the Umo people like small guys, but in fact, on 18 species I have most of the species that are small. I have 7 species small and only 3 tall. So most of them are small. Small ETs. So to describe our neighbors. But at least those ones are really small and are also microcephalic, but they are not the one we have on the Crabwood farm. They are not the Muacarisian. They are coming from another location, star from 96 light year. That's not the Crabwood farm one. But those small guys who are staying in submarine bays, in fact, are not very advanced as the other ones are. And they cannot have really scan examination like every other neighbors can do. They are obliged to abduct people to make their analyze. And the abducted people since the 1948 until 1988. So for 40 years they abducted people or analyzed their body, but especially without injuring them. That is very important. That's very important, without injuring them. But most of the ET species are able to scan your body, even your DNA, and they don't need to abduct anybody. So, if we have abduction after 1988, who is doing those abduction? I wonder if those abduction are lucid dreams, psychic problems linked with sex abuse, or abduction just psychic mental manipulation, and we have information that some ETs are doing some mental manipulation, but maybe it's not only ET who are doing mental manipulation, because we know that some psychotronics weapon exist and you can create in the brain in anybody the feeling that you are abducted. So what are abduction now? Lucid dreams, sex abuse problem transformed in psychic problem, mental manipulation by ET, or mental manipulation by somebody else on Earth? That's the question.
That is a very thought-provoking question, a very thought-provoking question, Dennis. And also, I'd like to add here, too, the possibility of rogue elements regarding both humans and ETs, that concept of rogue elements. But now, Dennis, to refer back to what you had said earlier, from your research, you think that visiting ET races are supposed to, or receive from other ET groups, if they wish to visit and interact with the Earth. And as you mentioned, you think that there's a policy of non-interference from ETs, that that's the norm, and that ETs would interfere at a planetary level only if a major imminent danger or catastrophe faced the Earth.
Yes, the conclusion I have through the UMO file is something I called the Pax Galactica. The meaning is that we are a planet where you have some guys, they are called Dokaians in the UMO language, a very old civilization who are doing a control for the incomes on Earth. Only people who are compliant with our psychic way of thinking and compliant with our way to receive the information from space, and they select the one who are able to come. And at least we don't have invasion. We have visit since hundred thousand years. We have seal that prove that we have ETs from a long time. We have very old picture from our ancient human that draw some picture amazing about the visit they have seen. And we still are not invited by ETs. So we can easily conclude that some space galactic cop are doing these Pax Galactica able to be comfortable for us and also authorize some experiment until those experiments don't injure the body of the people that are the unfortunately the victim of the experiment, but nobody are in have injury for this experiment. However, I not agree with those experiments, but that's what I can see on those document. And in fact, we can conclude that our Earth seems to be a kind of ET cafe, and they have this own experiment. The UMO people are involved in a communication experiment with letter and mail, by sent by mail. We have the miraculism involved in the crop circle experiment. We have some guys called Salianos in the UMO document, and those guys that are small too are involved in the mind control experiment. So we can easily understand that some people can say that they have some tricky stuff that happened to them, because I can talk about some very amazing experiment like that. Some guys will get after be in contact with a UFO, have some kind of a new psychic abilities and be able to build a machine, amazing electronic machines, and those kind of guys never studied electronic before. And other with of UFO who has other abilities for drawing. He draw very amazing picture, a very amazing drawing that you can do only if you are a very, very good painter. And this guy was not able, it was the first time in his life that he drew something. So you can think that mental interference and mental manipulation are very, very easy to do for ETs anyway. But it's just an experiment, and that not injury the people concerned.
Well, that's very thought-provoking information. And Dennis, if we could get back to the subject of binary code, and let me know here if I correctly understood that the Umites, during some of their expeditions to Earth, have material prepared in advance in binary code to be able to immediately communicate with the humans here if they need to?
We can think that they live for us in the first place where they landed. They built a base, an underground base,
right,
just for the first landing in the 1950 in March, the 30th March 1950. They landed in the south of France by night, and they built an underground base. The ship move off, and some six people stayed for a few months on Earth in the 1950. And what they say in the document, in the UMO document, is that they live inside the underground base. The material, and we can think that the material where they use some kind of computer, when we will phone these underground base, and also the material they use, and we can imagine that some message will be inside the base, at least we can think that.
Very interesting. And you know, Dennis, from your research as well, when you discuss the concepts on Umite navigation for their craft, you note that from research, it is thought that the computers on such a craft would not operate on binary logic, but that the Umite craft artificial intelligence systems for their craft might be based on tetravalent logic. I hope I'm correctly pronouncing that. T-E-T-R-A-V-A-L-E-N-T. Does that mean four-dimensional, or in other words, a different paradigm for them?
Yeah. For the craft, they use the conventional binary calculation, but not only. They also use two other values. That's the reason they talk about the tetravalent logic. The tetravalent logic is also used a long time ago, before Aristotle. Because Aristotle changed this old logic we used before Aristotle. We used four values, but Aristotle gave a new point of view on this logic, and we still use only true value. We say true on fake, and you have also in India still the teralem. The teralem is also a tetravalent logic, and it's still used, but we don't use it for the calculation still now. We use it for cultural.
Boy, that's interesting. Cultural. Thank you, Dennis. That is so interesting. Now, Dennis, you've also researched other UFO subjects regarding France and globally. In your book, Dennis, you mentioned the Trans-en-Provence 1981 case. And as you note, with this Trans-en-Provence ufology case, it's a French case, it presents ground evidence, trace evidence, indicating a craft using a type of, as you know, quote, magnetohydrodynamic, end quote, type device. And you give all sorts of interesting data collected from GEPAN, the Groupe d'études des phénomènes aérospatiaux non identifiés, that great French group, and all of the lab analyses that were performed on that trace evidence. Any further comments? That is just super.
Yes. This case was interesting because we have the evidence that something around the magneto-aerodynamic happened with the craft. In fact, some people believe that the magneto-aerodynamic was the device that make the propulsion. But in fact, no. When I have done the deciphering, I was able to understand that the magneto-aerodynamic was only a device to protect the craft from the collision of the particles. When you are traveling very fast, you can be in our cosmos, on in our frame, or in another three-dimensional frame, you can have some crash between your craft and the particles, because you are going very fast. So the magneto-aerodynamic device prevent the particle to collapse with the craft. And that's the reason they use this kind of device. But it's not the propulsion way they use. The propulsion way they use is also described in the UMO letters, and it was also a secret word they didn't want to talk about. And when I deciphered the word, I was able to understand what kind of propulsion they use. This propulsion, in fact, is an effect that is not known right now on Earth. This effect is not really anti-gravitational. It's something else. It's not a Newtonian gravitation, anti-gravitation. It's something else we don't know about. It's not a Lanceric effect neither. It's something else. The effect, it's something that I called, in fact, the trampoline effect. The trampoline effect is an effect on the layer between the two cosmos and the anti-cosmos. And the craft produce an impact, a frequency that impacts the layer, and the craft have a kind of trampoline effect that make it have some kind of anti-gravitational effect. And you can see him flying in one way and moving in another way. But that is not an effect that we know. It's really something new.
And it's described as well as other details, extensive details on Umite craft, their technology, the language. Your book and research really are fascinating, very, very thought-provoking, very worthy of study and consideration. It's a beautiful body of research. Now, I had a question here, and I think I've lost it. I'm thinking you had given such a beautiful explanation as to why, and this is the last question, and I appreciate your generosity with your time tonight, Dennis. That is that there is a reason why some of the Umite and other craft do look as though they're disappearing from by observers. And is that because they're changing the three-dimensional reference?
Yes, absolutely. If you look for some UFO video we have on the web, on several websites, you can see the UFO moving with a 90 angular movement. And the angle of 90 degree is something you cannot do, or you crash yourself inside the ship, but also the ship cannot do such a thing with the usual motor. So it happened something. What happened? When they need to do such a thing, to move in another way, or to stop and go back, in fact, what happened? They just switch to the other three-dimensional frame, and switching to the three other three-dimensional frame, they change their own mass, and as they can do a loop, they can do a big loop in the three other dimensional frame. So they do a loop and they quietly turn back and come back to the same point, and they come back to our three-dimensional frame. So what do you see during this time? It just the way the UFO do in three-dimensional frame. You don't see the loop that the UFO is doing in a few microseconds in the other frame. And that make them able to have the gravitational effect on themselves, and make them able, in fact, to change their direction without the problem they would have if they stayed in all two-dimensional form. That would not be possible for any craft on any technology to change the way with the 90 degrees angle. That is one way to explain how they do their amazing trip and with this craft.
Thank you, Dennis. And, you know, I also want to mention again to the reader the numerous drawings and diagrams in your... you also include a series of conceptual drawings on the Uman and Technologies by the artist David H. And, Dennis, you have your own several graphs there, your own brilliant deciphering, decoding of several of the Umayyad words to show how that hierarchical concept of functional phonemes works. Really intriguing. And I want to mention to our audience as well that Dennis's website blog can be found at www.denocla.com. His book and his film are entitled Presence, UFOs, Crop Circles, and Exo-Civilizations. It is, you have both an English version available, and you also have a French version available. Excellent work, very thought-provoking. And Dennis, I just hope you'll return to the show very soon. You've been an excellent guest.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Patrice, and thank you, Joe. I was very glad to be and UFO Paranormal Radio Network today. And, well, thank you. I do my work for awareness as long as I can and by my own. And I would thank also all my team because I work with many people and astronomers, mathematicians, physicists, and it's not very easy because we are not working in the light, we are working in the underground, and we hope that many scientists will join us.
Yes, and your work also includes a very interesting element. Regarding a manifesto, I'm trying to recall the name on it before I say goodbye. That also is in your book. Very thoughtful. Oh, Manifesto for the Recognition of Exo-Civilizations. Some really powerful elements in that outline, in your argument outline. And again, I hope so much you'll be a return guest, Dennis. And I know you'll be speaking again, too, very, very soon this summer. You already were speaking last month in Paris.
Yes, I spoke in Paris and all the France. I give lecture, and I will be in Great Britain in a few days for a lecture. I begin a tour in Great Britain, and later on in October and November, I will be in Spain to present the Spanish version. And I will be back in America and Mexico for next year, I think. So I hope so.
Excellent. Thank you again, Dennis. We appreciated your time. We appreciated the information. And also thanks for having, it was a lengthy interview, very informative. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Trish. Thank you, Joel. Thank you so much for all what you do.
And also thanks to our listeners for spending your time this evening with us. Have a great weekend. And Dennis, thanks again for that great research. And thank you, Joe. Everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone, for joining us this evening for this edition of A Global Focus with guest Dennis Roger DeNocla. We appreciate your time and hope everyone has a great weekend.